Yemenis.
This is a tragedy that children in Yemen suffer as a result of aggression, blockade, and the use of internationally prohibited weapons as well as malnutrition. In the case of the Siamese twins and congenital deformations, the biggest problem is that we cannot send them abroad to have surgery, so their lives are at risk.
The director of the Health Bureau called on the United Nations and the World Health Organization to send a plane to transport the two children or to send a medical team to conduct the surgery inside Yemen, where devastated and under-resourced health services cannot offer any help to these children.
I'm the father of the twins, and their condition is critical, and they need to receive medical care and surgery outside the country because the health situation in Yemen is collapsing and Sana'a airport is still closed.
Infants suffer a difficult situation in Yemen, and the absence of essential medical supplies and healthcare facilities needed for their survival and well-being. Yemen health services have been in a dire situation since the start of the Saudi-led war on the country in 2015. With the fast approaching of the new year, the Sana'a airport remains closed to sick children and women, causing the loss of many lives. The airport is open to United Nations airplanes only. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Local elections in Indian-administered Kashmir, held in 8 phases, have come to an end. The voting process has remained by and large peaceful amid stringent security measures. After the revocation of Kashmir's special status, regional political parties had refused to participate in the electoral process as a sign of protest against India's decision to strip Kashmir of its autonomous status. That resulted in the strengthening of the Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party in the Muslim majority region. However, this time, the regional parties formed an alliance to take part in the local elections. Compared to the past, a large number of people came forth to cast their ballots, and many of them told Press TV that their aim is to keep the BJP away from Kashmir's grassroots.
Since the BJP came to power in India, it started taking decisions against minorities. The BJP has taken Kashmir's autonomy, Kashmiri's jobs, and now they are eyeing land. They don't care about the people of Kashmir. We came to cast our votes against those people who only aim to destroy Kashmir's ethnicity in the name of mainstreaming Kashmir.
More and more people in Kashmir have developed skepticism on the overall electoral process after scores of video interviews of the District Development Council or DDC candidates started circulating on social media. A number of candidates have no idea what positions they are running for in the local administration, and even worse, some have no idea what DDC means.
Kashmir, man. In order for votes to be equally distributed, the Election Commission has accepted nominations from all sorts of people. There is no set prerequisite for candidates. I wonder who they are empowering. How can an uneducated person with no idea of economy, finance and politics seek equal rights and development for me? Basically, they do not need educated people. They want stooges who will implement what the Indian government will decide for us, without thinking about people's interests.
This is the first time that DDC elections are being held. Members of the DDC are expected to prepare and approve district plans and expenditure schemes, which will replace the district planning and development boards in all districts across the region. Earlier, district development boards looked after the planning, approval or implementation of centrally sponsored schemes. The result of the 8-phase elections will be announced on December 22nd. Apparently, the elections in Kashmir have paved the way for other electoral processes in the volatile region. However, many say this ballot has made the people of Kashmir politically aware of the fact that New Delhi is trying to thrust such electoral processes in order to create an impression that normalcy has taken hold after it stripped Kashmir of its autonomy. Actually, without building trust and bridging the gaps. Shahana Butt, Indian administered Kashmir.
The Chinese military on Saturday said it had tailed and monitored a U.S. warship as it passed through the Taiwan Strait. The military said the move deliberately raises the temperature of the Taiwan issue. It said the move jeopardizes peace and stability in the strait. The Chinese military also accused the U.S. of using the Taiwan issue as a pawn for what it called selfish strategic purposes. The U.S. Navy, however, said its guided missile destroyer wasn't a routine mission in accordance with international law. China considers Taiwan as part of its own territory and is opposed to the increasing U.S. support for the island. Last week, the U.S. approved a new major arms sales to Taiwan in a deal worth $280 million. The package is the sixth this year and includes advanced military communications equipment. Washington says the sale aims to improve the security of Taiwan, but some analysts believe the U.S. seeks to push back against China.
The United States doesn't want to create a war over Taiwan, but is trying to push the envelope, is trying to, without breaking the one-China policy, is selling more and more arms to Taiwan, as I said, as part of the pushback against China.
Tensions have been simmering between the U.S. and China over other issues as well, from trade to the coronavirus pandemic and political developments in Hong Kong. The U.S. has also prepared a so-called entity list that mainly hits key Chinese industries over what Washington calls ties to China's military. On Thursday, the Pentagon said U.S. warships would be more assertive in responding to what it described as violations of international law. It accused China of being the most pressing long-term strategic threat. In response, China said it seeks no conflict with the U.S. and wants mutual respect and cooperation leading to a win-win outcome.
We hope that the U.S. side will take a rational and objective view of China's development of its national defense and armed forces, work with China to focus on cooperation, manage differences, and bring the China-U.S. relationship back to the right track.
The souring ties between China and the U.S. come in the wake of President Donald Trump's America First policy. With the incoming U.S. President Joe Biden set to take office on January 20th, it remains to be seen how the currently toxic relationship between the world's two biggest economies will look like. Will the new U.S. president stick to Trump's policy tools and continue the frictions? Will he try to de-escalate the tensions, or will he take a more aggressive anti-China approach?
Russian President Vladimir Putin held his annual press conference. This year it was held in a new format, video conferencing, because of pandemic.
The end of the year Q&A session is a rare chance to get President Putin to answer important issues and draw attention to the country's problems. It has long become one of the biggest media events in the country, broadcasted live on main news channels and radio stations in Russia for the whole duration.
Speaking about the new START arms control treaty between Washington and Moscow, Putin accused the U.S. of starting a new arms race. Putin reiterated his call urging Washington to extend the new START arms control treaty for 1 year.
Now there's a threat that strategic arms reduction treaty is terminated. This would mean that there are no more restrictions on the arms race. None at all. We have called and continue to call on our Western partners to extend this treaty for at least a year. During this year, we would have substantive talks, as diplomats say, on what to do next and how to live on.
Putin said he believed U.S. President-elect Joe Biden is open to dialogue on the issue, but added Russia needs some reaction from the U.S.
That it is the last point that connects the Russian Federation with the United States on strategic issues, because all other treaties and agreements signed by Soviet Union, Russian Federation and the United States were dismissed, were destroyed by administration of Trump. Now we are entering a new period of development in American policy. That's why we hope that previous all agreements and treaties will be respected.
The new Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, also known as START, is the last remaining agreement that maintains a nuclear balance between the two countries. Putin also said that the unfounded poisoning scenario of opposition politician Alexei Navalny was in fact part of the U.S.-backed plot repeated by media to try to discredit the Russian leader. He stressed that Navalny was not important enough to be a target. Navalny, 44, was taken ill on a domestic flight on August 20. He was later transported to the German capital. German doctors, however, claimed Navalny had been poisoned with a substance from the group of cholinesterase inhibitors. Since then, Germany and other Western governments have been attacking Russia with accusations that it poisoned Navalny. Moscow has repeatedly and strongly rejected the allegation. Марина Кутунова, Москва.
Before entering his latest and perhaps last round of negotiations with UK counterparts, the EU's chief Brexit negotiator, Michel Barnier, addressed the European Parliament early on Friday morning.
Nous sommes à un moment de vérité.
It is the moment of truth.
Il nous reste...
We have very little time remaining, just a few hours to work through these negotiations in a useful fashion if we want this agreement to enter into force on the 1st of January.
There are less than 2 weeks to go before Britain might crash out of the Brexit transition period without a crucial EU trade deal.
It's shameful UK government strategy.
Some EU lawmakers are in no doubt as to which side is to blame for the deadlock.
The UK government is taking endless time to realise that some illusions of Brexit simply cannot be delivered.
Many legislators claim the UK faces financial ruin if Boris Johnson's government fails to reach an agreement with the EU. Meanwhile, the Scottish National Party is waiting in the wings to call a second independence referendum that could very well see the breakup of the United Kingdom. It has been pointed out that long delays can already be witnessed at EU-UK border crossings.
Dear British friends, is this what you voted for? Passport stamps and lorry queues? This moment is a victory for Europe.
But the European Union is in no position to gloat, it has been argued.
The real division isn't between the EU and the UK. It's between the haves and the have-nots. And we start dealing with that or there'll be a lot more Brexits to come.
Deal or no deal, business groups say the EU needs to pursue major structural reforms, especially in the context of Brexit.
There's a mismatch clearly, so we need better mobility. We need to be able to match the supply with the demand for workers across Europe, not just within member states.
Fishing rights remain the major sticking point in the negotiations. One EU lawmaker has reminded Boris Johnson that his closest ally will soon be history. The COVID-19 pandemic is still here, and so he should choose his next moves carefully. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on October 12, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with the participants at the joint graduation ceremony held at the Imam Ali Military Academy.
In order to employ logic for the sake of measuring our defensive power, we should see threats the way they are. Enemies conceal their threats in order to launch a surprise attack, and sometimes they magnify the size of threats in order to intimidate nations all over the world. The latter is done by most superpowers. They portray their threats and their powers with more glowing terms in order to force others into retreat. If you can see the real size of the threats, if a nation, country, armed force, and leaders and commanders in that armed force manage to see the correct measures of a threat, and if on the other hand, they see their true capacities, power, and talents, and they succeed in calculating them in the right way, and then organize and deploy them, against them make ready your strength to the utmost of your power, the Holy Quran, chapter 8, verse 60. And finally, if they manage to see the enemy's real threats, then national interests will surely be ensured, and national assets and identity will be preserved.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want or need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
If a nation has the defensive power to carry out such a calculation, then politicians and the people in that country feel calm and tranquil, and they will engage in carrying out the duties that are necessary in every country. Therefore, defensive power plays such a role. As I said, rationality means making the correct calculations. We should carry out correct calculations and have a healthy calculation system. This is what rationality means. However, when some people mention reason and rationality, they actually mean feeling afraid. When they say be reasonable, it means be afraid and passive. It means that we should run away in the face of the enemy. This should not be the case. Cowards do not have the right to speak of rationality.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi,
sir. Hi, kitty. Good morning. Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
this supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure, and provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
The debate.
Hello, welcome to the debate. I'm Kavit Ahway. It is called the biggest hack of the U.S. government in years. And the U.S., without proof, initially said that Russia is responsible. But now it has said China is also in on it. Well, the hacks were on such organizations like the Treasury and Commerce Departments, and even nuclear agencies within the U.S. In this edition of the debate, we will look at whether the U.S. is weak and vulnerable against these types of hacks, or have the hackers actually advanced so much that it could risk world security. Let's find out first more about these hacks. Wyatt Reed is our correspondent who joins us from Washington, D.C. Wyatt, please tell us about the hacks in terms of which agencies have been affected, because, for example, you had the U.S. Treasury that came out and said, as far as we can tell, nothing severe has been actually incurred on their, I guess, operations. At the same time, one of the organizations, or should I say entities, that is not really highlighted that much is nuclear organizations within the U.S., if there's truth to that, to have been affected.
Well, you're right in that we really just simply do not know exactly who is affected. Really, we don't know the basic five W's that any sort of journalistic endeavor is supposed to encompass: the who, the what, the why, the where, the when. None of this information has really been published by any of the reports that have come out so far. Much of it is largely speculative, almost entirely sourced to quote-unquote unnamed intelligence officials, people familiar with the matter. This sort of language is the type that's being employed to source this story. So we simply do not know, in great part, really, who exactly has been affected, nor do we know for sure who was behind it. All of the sources, again, on this are people coming from the Department of Defense, from the CIA, from the NSA, organizations who would have an incentive. And indeed, we know that the CIA actually does possess the capability of spoofing its own attacks to make them seem as though they're coming from other countries, other organizations. It's likely they're not the only only organization with access to this kind of technology. So really, the most basic variables of this story are simply not known. And, you know, I think that that will likely be the case going forward, but I would be happy to be proven wrong.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Wyatt Reed, our correspondent there, talking to us from Washington, D.C. Mike Billington is from the Executive Intelligence Review, who joins us from Hamilton, Virginia. Maybe he can shed some light on this and give us his analysis. Mike Billington, welcome. So our correspondent there has said that it's not quite clear yet the depth of the hack. Perhaps you can tell us about that and how this actually may have happened, because we're also looking at a duration of time from 10 months ago based on some reports that the hack began, and we're just hearing about it now.
I can't tell you the depth of it. I think your previous fellow is right, that they really don't know the extent of this. But I think what's clear, what is known, is that we're seeing another case of what Donald Trump correctly says is Russia, 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 fake news. There's no evidence, none whatsoever has been presented, just as there has been no evidence presented over these last 4 years of the claims by the Obama and Bush intelligence circles and their British friends about the collusion between Russia and Trump, or Russia at all, not even with Trump, in the 2016 election. There's no evidence, there's no proof. The Russians have very clearly ridiculed it as typical jokes. And you may or may not know Bill Binney, who is a very close friend of our LaRusha organization and appears with us regularly on our programs, who was the head of the technical division at the NSA, who actually developed the Thin Thread program, which was designed to root out terrorist acts, but was then misused by the NSA to set up the most massive mass surveillance in the history of the human race. Still the case that the U.S., while it's screaming and yelling about China having a surveillance economy, has the most massive surveillance capacities in history. And as your previous spokesman said, the what was called the marble framework part of the system that was set up and which Snowden revealed has the capacity to put fake source material in a leak in order to make it appear to come from Russia or Iran or China or anybody else. So this is known. I would say that probably the best proof that this is not Russia was that Adam Schiff, I hope you remember who Adam Schiff is. He's the member of the U.S. Intelligence Committee in the House, who for the last 4 years has said, I have absolute proof that Russia interfered in the 2016 election and fixed it for Donald Trump. And of course, he had no such evidence, any more than the U.S. had evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq when we decided to criminally and illegally destroy that country. This has now become common from this intelligence community. Trump actually took some major steps to try to rein this in, but he's only been partially successful. And we're now dealing with another Russia, Russia, Russia hoax, whose purpose is to set the stage for the Biden administration, if he gets in, which he may not, but he may, to be prepared for what they, in fact, were moving on during the Obama-Biden time, which was to prepare for war against Russia and China.
Okay. Let me bring in our guest, Vladimir Sotnikov, from Moscow. He's a strategic analyst from the Russian Academy of Sciences. Vladimir Sotnikov, welcome. So let me get first your
Good
reaction
evening.
Of how the U.S. Secretary of State was pretty sure, as he said, that Russia was behind it. Donald Trump said no in so many words and pointed the finger of blame at China. And our guest there has said that there is no proof that Russia was behind this. So first, your reaction to this.
My reaction, actually, this is a very good question. My reaction is it's absolutely rubbish. You know, Russia has nothing to do. And Russia just formally rejected these allegations and accusations of interfering by hackers hacking the U.S. governmental, some U.S. governmental institutions and agencies. And this is absolutely rubbish, because nor Russia, neither China nor Russia has nothing to do with this. What actually could be possible that once some a certain non-state actor, and if you remember the ISIS activities back two, three years ago, there were a lot of young sophisticated bright computer specialists, computer engineers from Western Europe who came for big money to ISIS stronghold in Syria to work for ISIS, being paid huge money. And I'm not claiming that this is ISIS, but any possible non-state actor, any possible radical Islamist organization could be standing behind this and could making the hacking attack by these computer scientists who actually probably stayed with them and tried to penetrate the U.S. governmental agencies, CIA, FBI, some NGOs in the United States, some think tanks. So this is probably like this. This is my first feeling, which actually I felt when I heard this news for the first time. And I think that the United States simply doesn't have any strong proof of any interference, neither Trump about China, nor Biden president-elect team, nor even State Secretary Pompeo, who actually claimed that Russia is accused by the United States of cyber attacks against U.S. Agencies.
Okay.
So that is my feeling.
Well, Mike Billington, to go along with what you have said, first of all, before we continue here, let me make sure that we, at least I know from you, Mike Billington, what your views are. I mean, do you believe that the U.S. was hacked, the different agencies that were involved?
Question. I think Mr. Sotnikov could very well be right that this is a non-state actor. We don't know because, of course, there's nothing being revealed about this. In fact, the person who was in charge for Homeland Security of our cybersecurity, this guy Chris Krebs, who lied and said there was the current election, the presidential election, was clean, there was no fraud, obvious lie, and Trump fired him. He's now running around ranting that this is Russia. And if in fact it were, then he certainly didn't do his job. But I think the other possibility, at least, that Mr. Sobokov would probably agree, is what your question implied, which is that this might not even be a serious breach. This might be an artificial breach run by the CIA. They have the capacity, as Mr. Binney exposed in his multiple studies of this, showing, for instance, that there was no hacking of the DNC computers, which was the basis of the entire Russiagate hoax, that in fact it was a download, that it's very possible that this is itself a hoax, a fraud, that the massive hacking may not even be true. in order to create a new Russiagate hoax to go along with the Chinagate hoax that's been perpetrated by Pompeo and the other radical lunatics in the Trump administration. But this is very possibly meant to set up a next administration if they succeed in getting Biden in, which they may or may not. There's still a very, very serious potential for overthrowing this fake election, the massive vote fraud that's already been exposed and never listened to in court. No court has heard the evidence. Every court has ruled that they don't have standing to protest this, which is why Trump himself brought the case to the Supreme Court yesterday. So this is all in the works, trying to prepare for Biden, who's already announced that he's hired plans to hire a Secretary of State whose only complaint about the Obama-Biden administration was that they didn't fully invade and destroy Syria the way they did Libya. And you can expect that will happen if you get the war party back in power. That the reason they had to get Trump out was because he's insisted on pulling out of these regime change wars, and they want to restore, in the midst of this massive global financial breakdown crisis taking place, only partially because of the pandemic.
Right.
It was already in the works. But in the midst of this, they cannot allow Trump to work with Putin, as he's insisted he should, and to end these endless wars. So okay. They therefore put absolutely everything they had into trying to bring down the Donald Trump personally.
Vladimir Sotnikov, the timing of this is something also that is somewhat interesting. And in terms of what the U.S. administration, if, as our guest said, the president-elect Biden gets elected to come into the White House, the chief of staff of the incoming White House chief of staff has said that President-elect Joe Biden's response to this will go beyond sanctions against Russia. So if that is the case, what type of reactions may we see if and when Joe Biden comes into the White House against Russia?
Yeah. Well, actually, thinking about that in the retrospective, actually, that you remember that President-elect Joseph Biden actually promised in his election campaign that he will significantly try to get the relations between the U.S. and Russia better. So you are right. The timing is very interesting because in a month or so, there will be a solemn oath of President-elect Biden on the 20th of January, and the new administration came to life. So I think my analysis is that Biden is not going to significantly get the relations between the United States better, because for two simple reasons. First of all, some circles in the United States, right, influential circles, right, like the military-industrial complex, some hoax in the U.S. Senate, in the Congress, and some influential businessmen won't let Biden, who probably actually won the elections on their money and on their support, to move ahead with the improving the U.S.-Russia relations. And the second reason, a simple reason too, is that we actually evidencing right now, we are witnessing the new Cold War. And I agree with my American colleague that this Russiagate hoax, Chinagate hoax, or whoever gate hoax, they won't let the new administration to improve the relations with Russia. So that means that the election promises of Joseph Biden wouldn't be coming true.
Okay, Mike.
Unfortunately, this is my analysis. This is my forecast.
So, Mike Billington, let's go along with that line. What can we expect from Joe Biden, again, if he is successful in coming into the White House? What type of approach may he want to pursue with Russia, and what will happen if the aggressive stance against Russia, as it sounds like from Joe Biden's response so far to this hacking campaign, is that a window of how he will be treating Russia in the future?
You have to look at this from above, not from below. If you have a Biden administration, we're facing a global holocaust, and I mean a holocaust. The World Food Program has already warned that we could have 270 million deaths in Africa from starvation, not just from the COVID, but from starvation. We will watch the Biden team not only rejoin the Paris climate change hoax, but implement what they call green finance, the intentional cutting off of credit, and this is what's been organized by the Bank of England chief and his cohorts, a cutting off of credit to all, not only fossil fuels, but to any industry that has a so-called carbon footprint based on the lie that carbon has something to do with climate change. We're looking at a global holocaust that will make anything in history pale by significance. And the war danger is simply aggravated by this global pandemic, financial breakdown crisis, threatening war danger, and so forth. So you have to do everything in your power to help expose the stealing of this election by the war party that supported Biden and by the British, who, as I'm sure you know, the House of Lords wrote years ago that everything possible must be done to prevent Trump from having a second term and doing what he threatens, which is to be friends with Russia, which he said was a good thing. And same similarly with China, where he was working with Xi Jinping until he fell for this foolish idea that he should blame them for the pandemic. But other than that, we had the potential of breaking up this British division of the world between the East and the West and bringing the U.S. and Russia and China together in a way that could end terrorism. It could reestablish the Bretton Woods financial system.
Okay.
These are still possible, but it must be done soon. And by the way, I think the potential of Trump pardoning Assange and Snowden and bringing that truth forth to the American people and to the world is the best chance we have of breaking up the vote fraud and actually turning the situation around in the U.S., which is extremely dangerous without doing something like that kind of a flanking operation.
Well, we'll find that out in due time. Okay. Seems like that's the end of the debate. Let me thank our guests. We have Vladimir Sotnikov, who's a strategic analyst from the Russian Academy of Sciences.
Thank
you very much for your comments. And from the Executive Intelligence Review, Mike Billington, thank you for your comments. And that does it for this edition of the debate. For Mika Vitale, entire team, it's goodbye until next time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the midst of the greatest health emergency in modern times, with more than 4 million surgical procedures delayed by the National Health Service, Britain has announced a record increase of £16.5 billion in so-called defense spending. But these billions are not for defense. Britain has no enemies other than those within who betray the trust of its ordinary people, its nurses and doctors, its carers, elderly, homeless, and youth, as successive neoliberal governments have done. Conservative and Labour, says John Pilger, journalist and writer, in an article published under the heading, "The most lethal virus is not COVID, it is war." Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. Britain's Armed Services Memorial is a silent hunting place. Set in the rural beauty of Staffordshire, in an arboretum of some 30,000 trees and sweeping lawns, its Homeric figures celebrate determination and sacrifice. The names of more than 16,000 British servicemen and women are listed. The literature says they died in operational theatre or were targeted by terrorists. Malaya, Ireland, Kenya, Hong Kong, Libya, Iraq, Palestine, and many more, including secret operations such as Indochina. Not a year has passed since peace was declared in 1945 that Britain has not sent military forces to fight the wars of empire. Not a year has passed when countries mostly poor and riven by conflict have not bought or have been soft-loaned British arms to further the wars or interests of empire. Empire? What empire? The investigative journalist Phil Miller recently revealed in Declassified that Boris Johnson's Britain maintained 145 military sites, called them bases, in 42 countries. Johnson has boasted that Britain is to be the foremost naval power in Europe. In the midst of the greatest health emergency in modern times, with more than 4 million surgical procedures delayed by the National Health Service, Johnson has announced a record increase of £16.5 billion in so-called defense spending, a figure that would restore the under-resourced NHS many times over. But these billions are not for defense. Britain has no enemies other than those within who betray the trust of its ordinary people. Its nurses and doctors, its carers, elderly, homeless, and youth, as successive neoliberal governments have done, Conservative and Labour. Pilcher said, exploring the security of the National War Memorial, I soon realized there was not a single monument or plinth or plaque or rosebush honoring the memory of Britain's victims, the civilians in the peacetime operations commemorated here. There is no remembrance of the Libyans killed when their country was willfully destroyed by Prime Minister David Cameron and his collaborators in Paris and Washington. There is no word of regret for the Serbian women and children killed by British bombs, dropped from a safe height on schools, factories, bridges, towns, on the orders of Tony Blair, or for the impoverished Yemeni children extinguished by Saudi regime pilots, with their logistics and targets supplied by Britons in the air-conditioned safety of Riyadh, or for the Syrians starved by sanctions. There is no monument to the Palestinian children murdered with the British elite's enduring connivance, such as the recent campaign that destroyed a modest reform movement within the Labour Party with the specious accusations of anti-Semitism. 2 weeks ago, the Zionist regime's military chief of staff and Britain's chief of the defense staff signed an agreement to formalize and enhance military cooperation. This was not new. More British arms and logistical support will now flow to the fake and lawless regime in Tel Aviv, whose snipers target children and psychopaths, interrogate children in extreme isolation. Perhaps the most striking omission at the Staffordshire War Memorial is an acknowledgement of the million Iraqis whose lives and country were destroyed by the illegal invasion of Blair and Bush in 2003. ORB, a member of the British Polling Council, put the figure at 1.2 million. In 2013, the Congress organization asked a cross-section of the British public how many Iraqis had died in the invasion. A majority said fewer than 10,000. is such a lethal silence sustained in a sophisticated society? The answer is that propaganda is far more effective in societies that regard themselves as free than in dictatorships and autocracies, include censorship by omission. Western propaganda industries, both political and cultural, including most of the media, are the most powerful and refined on earth. Big lies can be repeated incessantly in comforting BBC voices. Omissions are no problem. A similar question relates to nuclear war, whose threat is of no interest, to quote Harold Pinter. In South Korea, a missile system known as Terminal High Altitude Air Defense, or THAAD, is aimed point-blank at China across the narrow East China Sea. Russia, a nuclear power, is encircled by the war-making group known as NATO, with British troops regularly maneuvering right up to the border where Hitler invaded. Pilger said, "A few years after the invasion of Iraq, I made a film called The War You Don't See, in which I asked leading American and British journalists, as well as TV news executives, people I knew as colleagues, why and how Bush and Blair were allowed to get away with the great crime in Iraq, considering that the lies were not very clever. Their response surprised me. Had we, they said, that is journalists and broadcasters, especially in the U.S., challenged the claims of the White House and Downing Street, investigated and exposed the lies, instead of amplifying and echoing them, the invasion of Iraq in 2003 probably would not have happened. Countless people would be alive today, for 1 million refugees would not have fled. The grisly Daesh, a product of the Blair Bush invasion, might not have been conceived." David Rose then, with the London Observer, which supported the invasion, described the peak of lies fed to me by a fairly sophisticated disinformation campaign. Raghe Umar then, the BBC's man in Iraq, told me we failed to press the most uncomfortable buttons hard enough. Dan Rather, the CBS anchorman, agreed, as did many others. I admired these journalists who broke the silence, but they are honorable exceptions. Today, the war drums have new and highly enthusiastic beaters in Britain, America, and the Western world. COVID has provided cover for this pandemic of propaganda. In July, Morrison took his cue from Trump and announced that Australia, which has no enemies, would spend $270 billion on provoking one, including missiles that could reach China. The Australian media cheered almost as one, delivering a shower of abuse at China. Thousands of Chinese students who had guaranteed the gross salaries of Australian vice chancellors were advised by the government to go elsewhere. Colonial racism is never hard to revive. In a part of the article, Pilger added, "Some years ago, I interviewed the former head of the CIA in Latin America, Duan Clarage. In a few refreshingly honest words, he summed up Western foreign policy as it is ordained and directed by Washington. The superpower, he said, could do what it wanted, where it wanted, whenever its strategic interests dictated. His words were, get used to it, world. I have reported a number of wars. I have seen the remains of children and women and the elderly bombed and burned to death. Their villages laid to waste. Their petrified trees festooned with human parts and much else. Perhaps that is why I reserve a specific contempt for those who promote the crime of rapacious war, who beckon it with bad faith and profanities, having never experienced it themselves. Their monopoly must be broken."
Good morning.
From the heart of beautiful Iran, IRIB English Radio.